Good morning. Let's make a start to the day. Good morning and welcome. I'm Sandy Cameron. I chair the Council of SASO, and my pleasure to invite your participation and welcome you to SASO's 50th annual conference. We're delighted to see so many people here today, and in particular so many students, and we hope that this will be the start of a long association for you, as it has been for many of us here, with SASO as an organisation where there is a unique opportunity to meet people across the justice sector in Scotland at all levels and in all areas. So do feel welcome. Do take the chance to talk to people that you might not otherwise have come across before. At this point, my main responsibility is to introduce our chair for the conference. Each year, we invite someone to take the chair for our conference. And this year, for our 50th conference, we're absolutely delighted that Lord Carloway has agreed to do this. All the more remarkably, given how busy his working life is, and not least of all, lately, with the issues that he's been having to deal with. To have the Lord President chair our conference is a considerable honour, and I think marks out both his commitment and interest in the organisation, but also the standing that SASO has in the sector for this year. Lord Carloway has been both a senator of the College of Justice since 2000. He was then the Lord Justice Clerk, and then he was appointed to be Lord President of the Court of Session in 2015. So he's here as Scotland's most senior judge, and we're very pleased indeed to be able to welcome him and for me to hand over to Lord Carloway to chair the conference. Thank you.
That's the first thing achieved, not falling off the podium. Can I also extend my welcome to SASO's 50th annual conference? It's nice to see so many friends here, and the volume of sound over coffee is always a good indicator of a pleasant day ahead. I too, like Sandy, wish to extend a particular welcome to the students from universities across the country who've made their way here. It is, of course, extremely encouraging to see young people taking an interest in the important issues which we are going to address in the course of the next 2 days. I've been asked to remind everyone that the conference will be audio recorded and that there is always the prospect of the press being present or some form of reporting, so please bear that in mind. Our theme is Reducing Violence, Radical Ideas. Having delegates, and particularly our keynote speakers, from such a wide range of disciplines and perspectives is impressive. This is how the best policies are formed. It is a combination of the different disciplines which leads to the most intelligent crime prevention policies and which ultimately saves lives. That is why the work of SASO and especially events like this, which bring the varied experience to the table, are so important. From the perspective of the judiciary, I should perhaps just mention the reform which is of most relevance to the work which SASO carries out, and that is the coming into force last November of the Scottish Sentencing Council's first sentencing guideline. This guideline is aimed at a high, almost abstract level, providing one universal principle that all sentences must be fair and proportionate. There are five broad-based purposes which a sentence must have to be proportionate. These are the protection of the public, punishment, rehabilitation — that's the second task done, which is being able to pronounce rehabilitation correctly, giving the offender the chance to make amends, and the ability of society to express its concern or disapproval. No mainstream sentencing philosophy is left out, The Council's work, and we may hear more of this tomorrow from Lord Turnbull, is at this stage primarily the creation of transparent, consistent intellectual frameworks. It is focused on the research, preparation, and consultation which is required for guidelines on the sentencing of young people, the sentencing process itself, and the sentencing of for sexual offences. One of the most interesting features of their work recently has been deciding what a young person actually is. We've all been used to looking at figures such as 16 or 18 or perhaps even 21, but the research, the literature research which the Council has carried out may actually result in a young person being anyone under the age of 25, and that may well revolutionise our thinking on sentencing in the future. Given the range of the disciplines of today's speakers, their own research and perspectives will undoubtedly instruct the Sentencing Council's work in the future. But back to today, I'm sure you will agree that the organisers have once again put together a fascinating collection of speakers. Their perspectives traverse the international to the local, the academic and to the practical. I'm about, of course, to introduce our keynote speaker, Professor Eisner, who is going to talk on his subject from a European, if not global, perspective. But I should mention the other keynote speakers today, simply to put what he will be talking about in context. The second keynote speaker is Dr. Susan Batchelor, who will take stock of the current landscape of violent crime in Scotland. And then we have Niven Rennie, who has been the director of the Scottish Violent Reduction Unit, who will speak about his work in that and, I'm sure, other roles. Following the presentations from each speaker, I will invite questions from the floor. And in particular, can I just reiterate what Sandy has said in relation to our student guests today. Please do engage with the speakers. Don't be afraid to offer your own views, particularly in the interactive session, which is going to follow this morning's work. The interaction section, which will be chaired by Sandy Cameron, is going to involve six short presentations of ideas at reducing violence in Scotland. And after each of these, everyone will have an opportunity to discuss the ideas and to report back. The presentations will be on, first, changing the design of the domestic knife, the role of Snapchat and Fortnite, third-party intervention in violent situations, evidence-based preventative criminal justice, multidisciplinary approaches to high-risk young people, and finally, breathing and meditation as tools to prevent violence. Our final speaker of the day will be Dan Johnston, who will be talking about the origins of violence and how to respond to them. Tomorrow's agenda, I should mention, will be slightly altered. Unfortunately, Lucy Adams, who we were expecting in particular to do a wrap-up session, is not able to join us. So matters will be brought forward a little and closed slightly earlier than anticipated. Now, I've managed to forget Professor Eisner's biography, so I'm just going to get that. Some years ago, I remember Ken Livingston, who was then Mayor of London, saying that he would halve London's crime rate in a period of 4 years. His opponent in the mayoral contest was Simon Hughes, and he replied that not even Batman could achieve that objective. As we may hear, although 4 years may be a little difficult, perhaps 30 years will be possible even without the assistance of a superhero. So first, Professor Eisner. Manuel Eisner is the Wolfson Professor of Criminology and Professor of Comparative and Developmental Criminology at Cambridge University and Director of the Violence Research Centre at Cambridge. He studied history at the University of Zurich and has a PhD in sociology. His academic work revolves around the explanation of the causes, consequences, and prevention of interpersonal violence across human societies. He has published widely in a number of languages and works as an expert with the WHO, UNICEF, and the World Bank. He organized the first global conference on violence reduction at Cambridge University and was awarded the European Criminology Award in 2017. His work on levels of violence across Europe over the last 800 years has become a landmark in our knowledge of historical patterns of violence. He demonstrated a long-term pattern in particular of declining homicide in Europe, but with geographical variations. So it is a great pleasure for me to introduce Professor Eisner and hand over the podium to him. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lord Justice Callaghan, for these introductory words. It's a great pleasure for me to have been invited here to talk to you about some of my work. You can see the title here, and as you could already hear, it will be about what is needed to reduce worldwide levels of violence by 50% in the next 30 years or so. And this question goes back to a conference that we held in 2014 where we brought together 150 academics. We locked them up for 3 days and we said, come up with a solution to this question. Academics don't like to think about these questions because we like to criticize others for having ideas about what needs to be done. And we tried to get them to come up with some ideas about what is needed. And since then, this topic or this way of thinking has been something that I have been very interested in. We happened to do this conference just a few months before the United Nations launched their Sustainable Development Goals. The Sustainable Development Goals are the sequel to the Millennium Development Goals that were launched in 2000, and they include 17 separate goals to achieve sustainable development on this earth. If I show you these 17 development goals here, I hope you can see them at the back. If not, don't worry, I will just introduce you to one important idea of these sustainable development goals. Namely that for the first time ever, sustainability includes criminology as one of the core subjects that help to achieve sustainability. In that across these 17 goals, violence reduction is one of the core bases for achieving sustainability. This is reflected, for example, within goal 4, the target of providing safe, non-violent, inclusive learning environments for all. Under goal 5, there is a target to eliminate all forms of violence against all women and girls in public and private spheres. You can see here, by the way, that my language is relatively moderate when I say reducing violence by 50%, because in the Sustainable Development Goals, the language is such that they say eliminate all violence. This goes back to the language of the 1990s, and it's a political language primarily. Under goal 16, which is about peace and justice, there is, for instance, the target to significantly reduce all forms of violence and related death rates, and there is the one target that I'm particularly interested in my current work, namely to end child abuse, exploitation, trafficking, and all forms of violence against children. So you can see here that there is a lot of global interest in violence reduction. These are some figures to show you the size of the problem that we are trying to address. Globally, there are currently about 430,000 homicides per year. So if you translate this, since the beginning of the millennium, roughly 17 million people killed through homicides globally. Roughly one out of three women aged 15 and over have experienced physical or sexual intimate partner violence, and the recent meta-analysis suggests that roughly globally, every second child under the age of 18 has experienced some kind of violence in the past year. These are big numbers. If we translate this into global population numbers, this is about 800 million women globally and roughly 1 billion children. Violent victimization has a large number of different negative consequences. It has negative consequences on internalizing problems such as depression and anxiety. It has negative consequences, for instance, on the likelihood of substance use, and it has negative consequences on the likelihood of offending. Violence has massive global financial costs. There are various estimates around, and I don't entirely trust these estimates, but here is just one set of figures that have been produced by Annette Hoefler at the University of Oxford, who comes up with the estimate of something like between 1 and 5% of global GDP is reduced through the costs of interpersonal violence. So you can see that in some countries especially, violence reduction may be an important factor that hinders economic growth, and reducing violence may be a way to also help societies to do better. The problem is not equally distributed across the world. I show you here a map of the world where each country has the size proportionate to the number of homicides. And you can easily see here that some areas in the world stand out as having much more problems with violence than others. Latin America is by far most affected by homicide. It has the high, 9 of the 10 countries with the highest levels of homicide globally are in Latin America. But you can also see that Africa is very high, while the place where we are currently are, Scotland, is comparatively low on a global scale. Now I want to show you a second map which shows academic output with the same metric where each country has the size of the amount of academic output. This is what the world looks like by academic output. Now this is an important first message in terms of reducing and addressing violence globally. The knowledge, this is not about criminological knowledge or specifically about violence reduction knowledge. This is just about overall academic output. But probably the knowledge related to violence reduction is distributed quite similarly. The message here is that the knowledge is not where the problem lies, and we need to make more efforts to translate and transfer knowledge to the countries where the problem is most pressing. So what has been achieved in the last decade or two decades? Just very briefly, a few main achievements in this area. There is a growth of available data. For example, the violence against children surveys that have now been conducted in 16 low and middle income countries. They are national big surveys that provide epidemiological data that help governments that previously had no information whatsoever to better address violence against children. There are more programs and evaluations, for example, the Parenting for Lifelong Health intervention that has been developed in collaboration between the World Health Organization, the University of Cape Town, and the University of Oxford, which is an open source parent training program, because parent training programs, as many of you will know, are often sold commercially. The costs are not affordable to many people or to agencies that would like to provide something that supports parenting, but this is an open source program intentionally designed to be available also in low and middle income contexts. There's the development of global information systems. And probably most importantly, what the Sustainable Development Goals have done is to add to the mobilization of stakeholders. This was not initiated with the Sustainable Development Goals. When you think, for example, about the field of violence against women, The global mobilization goes back much further to the mid-1990s, but including this in the Sustainable Development Goals has led to a stronger mobilization under a public health approach rather than a primarily punitive approach that is focused on the criminal justice system, on the increasing penalties, although there is globally, I think one should say, a tension between the two approaches that is still very strongly visible. So there is a growing toolbox of prevention strategies. I just want to mention one approach that I'm quite familiar with, which is the INSPIRE framework. It was developed by the World Health Organization together with the US Centers for Diseases Control and Prevention and with an additional several international organizations. It's rooted in a public health approach and it presents seven different strategies. I just want to briefly show you these strategies. Again, it's not important that you read, you can't read through each of these strategies. I give you one example for each of these strategies. Under implementing and enforcement of laws, for instance, implement laws that ban corporal punishment, because we now understand very well that corporal punishment is bad, and within the United Kingdom, of course, Scotland is taking the lead here with banning corporal punishment in Scotland. Implement education and community mobilization programs against violence under norms and values. In many countries, there are norms and values that support violence, and we need to address these norms and values. Create safe environments by targeting hotspots and creating safe environments, providing parent training programs, implement cash transfer programs, which have been shown to be surprisingly successful in low resource settings as a strategy to address violence, improve child protection services, and finally, implement life and social skills training. So this is this package that was developed by WHO, and it's currently being implemented in a number of places through the Global Partnership to End Violence Against Children. I'm not going to go through the details of what this global partnership is. It currently includes one of the ideas that they have developed is this idea of pathfinder cities and pathfinder countries. So what they do is to work specifically with selected cities, trying to change the way cities address violence through local services. The University of Edinburgh plays a very important role in this global partnership through a collaboration with the School of Education, School of Social and Political Sciences, and the Edinburgh Futures Institute. So I want to move on here now and ask the question, these are the kinds of things that are currently done, but do we need to think bigger and differently about this problem? And of course, I'm not going to talk about specific